Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Wishing you a happy Friday. It's November 14th, 2025. So good to be with you here on EWTN's Catholic Connection. A lot to talk about this morning, a busy morning. And we do hope you can stay tuned for both hours of the program. Of course, we'll have your weather for you in just a moment, as well as your news. But first, let's look at the rundown, as we say in the biz. Of course, it's a Friday. That means our very own Doug Keck, President Emeritus, will be joining us with our Inside Word at EWTN. I love this segment because I feel like I get up to date on all the current programming and the programming that's coming in the very near future, so I don't have to miss a thing. And I can just go back to EWTN.com if I forget something that Doug said, and it's right there on the homepage. So Doug will be joining us, and we are getting closer to the new liturgical year. We're getting closer to Advent. We're getting closer to the holidays. And of course, EWTN is preparing all kinds of great resources for you, and we'll discuss with Doug at about 15, 16 minutes past the hour. Also, because it's a Friday, that means it's Fact Check Friday. And today we are going to be interviewing Catherine Snyder with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. There's a new study out of the UK, and this is something that anyone who cares about kids, and I know that's all of you out there, especially if you're parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, or maybe you work in catechesis for young kids at the schools or teach. There's a new UK study revealing that children are increasingly being exposed to pornography, especially through accidental social media exposure, over a quarter by age 11, and some saying even, get this, 6 years or younger. The report confirms children are being exposed to pornography at very young ages, and that is no longer a matter of if they will be exposed, but when. Social media companies, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation says, are frequently the gateway to pornography. A fact reconfirmed by the study, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation advocates for age verification, device filter legislation, and the App Store Accountability Act as a part of a multi-layered approach for protecting children from pornography, and they say they continue to urge tech platforms to confront children's ability to access pornography. I mean, it's just getting even crazier and crazier out there. It's so important to be on top of this as parents, and again, as educators and those of us who care about kids. So Catherine Snyder will bring us up to date on this and what we can do about it as we're concerned. And she, again, is with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Another important story we're going to look at, because we are your pro-life network, EWTN. Father Paul Sullins is the Ruth Institute Senior Research Associate. And the topic is persistent emotional distress after abortion in the U.S. He just had an article with some very solid research about post-abortive healing and how women are indeed pained by their abortions. It was recently published in a major health journal. This is super important. And he's talking about how his study directly challenges the pro-abortion secular narrative that abortion benefits women's mental health and life development. Oh my goodness. Nothing could be further from the truth. And we have the evidence to prove that. Father Paul will be joining us to wrap up a Friday morning edition of Catholic Connection, the first hour. And of course, the next hour is going to be exciting as well with my friend Bill Donahue from the Catholic League. More on that a little bit later, though. Right now, we do want to give you the weather forecast and find out what's happening on the West Coast because of all those storms. The National Weather Service is telling us this morning that we have an atmospheric river continuing to hit areas with heavy rain and snow for parts of California this weekend. The atmospheric river will continue to bring gusty winds, moderate to heavy rainfall, as well as potential flooding to the southern part of the state and the southern Great Basin. And that's going to be in existence until Sunday. And periods of heavy snow will continue as well above 7,000 feet over the Sierra Nevada mountains associated with the atmospheric river. So keep that in mind. That's a main area that they're looking at weather-wise. Otherwise, around the country, it seems to be pretty quiet. Again, it is a Friday, November 14th, wishing you a beautiful day, and we will check the news right now and see what's happening. It's a very, very busy news day, a lot coming out of the Conference of Catholic Bishops. Let's see what's happening. It is, again, November 14th, 2025, and you're listening to EWTN. Sharon Reardon tells us Los Angeles Archbishop Jose Gomez says a nation must come together to reform the broken immigration system.
He made those comments on Wednesday, just one day after the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops delivered what they called a special pastoral message on immigration in Baltimore. While the bishops expressed concern for the federal government's enforcement actions, they also said that they appreciate that countries should be able to establish a fair and orderly immigration system for the sake of the common good. The bishop's message went on to say, quote, human dignity and national security should not be in conflict, end quote. I'm Sharon Reardon.
Meanwhile, as Catholic News Agency tells us in a special report this morning at CatholicNewsAgency.com, the Catholic advocacy organization Catholic Vote releasing a new report examining the Trump administration's immigration enforcement efforts, concluding Christians must balance charity toward the immigrant with the common good of the receiving state. The report is titled Immigration Enforcement and the Christian Conscience, and it comes on the heels, as you just heard, of the special message on immigration released by the USCCB earlier this week. The document says a faithful Catholic approach to immigration begins not with politics, but with people. Compassion, hospitality, and solidarity with the poor are not optional virtues. That's a quote from the Catholic Vote president and CEO Kelsey Reinhardt, who added in a press release accompanying the report that they are at the center of the gospel, yet mercy and justice travel together. One without the other distorts both. The report labels the Biden administration's border policies as reckless and credits them for resulting in human trafficking, sexual exploitation of immigrants without legal status, and rampant drug cartels. Catholics who advocate strong but humane immigration enforcement are sometimes accused of disobeying their bishops or the Pope and even violating church teaching, the report states. Properly speaking, however, there is no such thing as an official Catholic position on the practical details of immigration policy. The report says that despite what some church leaders in America have indicated, a faithful Catholic can support strong and humane immigration law enforcement by means such as physical barriers, detention, and deportation without violating church teaching. The report asserts that Catholic teaching in immigration has been distorted by an ideological immigration lobby within the church that has sought to present amnesty, minimal law enforcement, and more legal immigration as the only acceptable position for Catholics. The Oklahoma governor has granted clemency for a man on death row minutes before he was set to be executed. Governor Stitt saying he made that decision to save Tremaine Wood's life after a thorough review of the facts and prayerful consideration. The 46-year-old was convicted of killing a teen during a motel robbery on New Year's Day back in 2002. The pardoned and parole board had recommended clemency, saying his court-appointed attorney admitted to drinking and using cocaine during the trial. Vice President Vance is speaking out regarding the government shutdown.
Oh, of course. Privately, we were having conversations all the time. And frankly, privately, the Democrats would recognize the position of their far left was crazy. But they all feel a little bit like they're being held hostage by their far left. You said it very well. Chuck Schumer, this probably ended his career.
Fox said in an interview with Fox News, or Vance said in an interview with Fox News, that Democrats brought stress to troops, air traffic controllers, and caused flight cancellations in his first public comment since the federal government officially reopened. The vice president also saying it was all for literally nothing. Top Democrats rejected weeks ago. Federal employees will now get back on the job as they and those who continue to work through the shutdown wait to learn when they will receive their back pay. Federal food assistance will resume for the millions of people still waiting for their full November payments as well. And the FAA is keeping flight reductions frozen after the government shutdown ended earlier this week. Flights have been cut due to staffing shortages as air traffic controllers have had to work without pay, as you heard, and many were even calling in sick. More cuts were planned until President Trump signed off on ending the shutdown Wednesday night. The FAA is saying it will still monitor staffing levels as controllers start to receive their back pay. Meanwhile, Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem is praising TSA agents for their work during the government shutdown. During a press conference yesterday, she said agents stepped up and showed outstanding patriotism and service.
Stepped up every single day to make sure that those individuals at our airports and at our transportation systems continued to be safe and secure while they went about their daily lives and limited the impact on those families that relied so much on getting to where they needed to be on time.
She also announced and handed out $10,000 bonuses for agents who worked as the shutdown rolled on. The FAA has frozen flight reductions now again that the shutdown is over. And again, flights have been cut due to staff shortages. More cuts were planned, as we mentioned earlier, until President signed off on ending the shutdown. And Jim Roop tells us Secretary of War Pete Hegseth is announcing a new military operation targeting more drug boats.
In a Thursday post on X, Hegseth said the U.S. Southern Command will lead Operation Southern Spear. Southern Command oversees military operations in the Caribbean and Latin America. And in the post, Hegseth said, the Western Hemisphere is America's neighborhood, and we will protect it. This comes as the Trump administration continues to target alleged drug boats in the region. I'm Jim Roop.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio is designating four European-based groups as foreign terrorist organizations. The administration is slinging out a German-based group, an Italian-based organization, and Greece's Armed Proletarian Justice, as well as a Revolutionary Class Self-Defense. Rubio's announcement following the Trump administration's designation Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization back in September. The designations are slated to go into effect next week, and Rubio says the nation will continue using all available tools for protection against what the administration deems to be anti-American, anti-capitalist, and anti-Christian terrorist groups. Police are on the hunt for a person who tried to confront acting U.S. Attorney for New Jersey, Elena Haba, at her Newark office.
In a post, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi says last night an individual attempted to confront Haba and destroyed property in her office and then fled the scene. Bondi says Haba was not harmed. She adds this is unfortunately becoming a trend as radicals continue to attack law enforcement agents around the country. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
People across the globe are worried about AI's impact, but they do not think the technology will come for their jobs. That's according to a new YouGov poll where 72% of American respondents said they worried about the broader economic effects of AI, while only 47% said they were concerned about their own job. When looking abroad, the survey found 70% of adults surveyed in the UK do worry about economy-wide AI impacts, compared to 39% who worry about AI-related consequences for their own occupation. The survey, covering nearly 5,000 adults in the U.S., U.K., India, and Brazil, and comes on the heels of major corporations laying off workers and citing AI as the reason. And the penny is no longer being minted in the U.S. These New Yorkers have started to stash them.
Gotta save the ones that you do have, right?
It's funny because I found like three buckets of pennies on the street, and I put them in the house, and I'm like keeping them now.
I'm gonna cash them in. You gotta download one of those apps and see what the value of the coins are now, yeah.
The Fed say it cost about 4 cents to make a single penny, and the move will save American taxpayers $56 million. People can still use their pennies, just that new ones won't be coined. There should still be plenty to go around, since the U.S. estimates about 300 billion pennies remain in circulation. And finally, in our news segment on a Friday morning at November 14th, the list of the best places to go for Thanksgiving is out, and Mark Mayfield fills us in.
What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this? Where's the turkey, Chuck? Don't you know anything about Thanksgiving dinners?
WalletHub ranked 100 cities across the country using such metrics as the cost of the Thanksgiving dinner, the average number of delayed flights, volunteer opportunities, and forecast precipitation. The top spot went to San Antonio, Texas, followed by Atlanta, Virginia Beach, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm Mark Mayfield.
It is a Friday. It is November 14th. Great to be with you on a Friday and every day, Monday through Friday, here at EWTN. Coming up, of course, Doug Keck joins us on a Friday morning with our Inside Word, a look at the great programming in the next week or so. We'll be right back. It's a Friday, or Fri-yay, as I like to say, especially when Doug Keck joins us, our President Emeritus for our Inside Word. Hello, my friend. How's your Friday going today?
Great. How about you?
Great. So great. And you have better now that you're with us. So what's coming up?
Well, our wonderful programming provided by our great team over there of Peter Gagnon and his crew. We've got, and John Elson, we've got this weekend some live events, inauguration of the academic year, live event from the Pontifical Lateran University. That's happening today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, so you can check that out. We've got a new special on the miracles of the Eucharist on La Siano by our good friend and some Michael O'Neill. And that's airing at 5 p.m. today, and that's all new, and Michael Neal's work is always excellent. And then we move into Meeting with the World of Cinema, and that's also a live event happening on Saturday, 5:30 a.m. Eastern, and then 3 p.m. is the encore. That's the live one in the morning. You can check that out as the Pope meets with actors, directors, and other figures in the film industry at the Vatican's Clementine Hall. We also have a special on Christians in Turkey that we're airing tomorrow at 2 p.m., and that's obviously because the Pope will make his first visit abroad this month to Turkey over really Thanksgiving and then on to Lebanon. So that trip will take around from the 27th through the 2nd of December. And, of course, EWTN will offer complete coverage. We've also got Be Poor With Me, Reflections on Poverty, an original documentary that examines the nature of poverty. And that's airing on Sunday, the November 16th at 2:30 p.m. Next week, as we look ahead, on Monday, we've got the opening mass for the cause of Sister Anela Zervas, OSB. And this comes from the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Crookston, Minnesota. And so that's a local sister then. You can check that out. And that event is pre-taped, but it's airing on the 17th at 3 p.m. We also have a new series that our friend Father Bernard McGuckin, who's done several series from Ireland for us. This one's focused on the Feast of Christ the King. It's a multi-part series. It's going to air on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week.
Oh, that's cool.
And that leads up to the Feast of Christ the King, which is coming up on the 23rd. EWTN Live Father Will Stratton will be on, leader of Texas A&M's University and Blinn College's campus ministry. Texas A&M not only has a great football team, they really have a great Catholic program there, and that's going to be airing on Wednesday, November 19th. And then looking ahead to the big event coming up is the National Catholic Youth Conference opening session from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. That's Thursday night on the 20th at 7 p.m., and then on Friday, there's prayer and general session. So EWTN is all over that, really, is the number one broadcaster, the official broadcaster of the National Catholic Youth Conference. So check that out. Check out everything at EWTN.com, of course. Go to our YouTube channel, our on-demand platform, and also our wonderful Podcast Central for all those wonderful audio and radio podcasts.
There's a lot going on. Something like the conference, youth conference, has to require an awful lot of staff and a lot of hard prep work beforehand, right?
Absolutely. It's just like the Eucharistic Congress really is a kind of a follow-up to that, you know, kind of event, the size of that kind of event. And that's why the teams that that Peter Gagne on his team and on the Spanish side as well with Enrique Duprat, you know, have to spend, you know, months you know, planning these things. And so, there's a lot, as you know, it goes into all of that. And a lot of coordination. Even if you're not doing everything yourself, you still have to coordinate with all of the other entities that are involved in the event.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, we haven't had a chance to talk since we learned about the death of Paul Batty. I felt so bad about that. He contributed so much to Catholic News Agency, to Catholic media in general. He was always so supportive of, you know, Mother Angelica and the network, and he died, so he was only in his mid-70s.
Right. Yeah, I know. You know, I kicked myself because my original intention was to mention that on Father Spitzer's Universe and show a clip of an interview I did with him on his book on the Montepello. But he was such a nice man, really.
So nice.
Such a nice guy. He did a wonderful program on the Rosary for our German channel, which was then translated into English. And again, so many times with these people, what the heart-wrenching part is that such a nice, I hate to repeat myself, but he was such a great guy.
His wife was wonderful, too.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I knew he had been sick on and off, because I know the last time I saw him, which was probably several years ago in person, he had just kind of recovered from being ill. I don't remember the specifics, but yeah.
I think it was a heart issue, wasn't it?
Maybe that's you're right. You're right. It was a heart issue initially and stuff. Yeah, I heard about I don't want to just say that to anybody who didn't know him, he was a wonderful, wonderful Catholic and a wonderful guy, devoted to the church and to the faith. And I'm sure he's, as much as we can be sure of anything, is receiving his reward, if not now, shortly in the future.
Well, he really introduced the world to the Vale of Montepello and really got people thinking about that and wrote more than one book about it. And I didn't realize this until I learned about his death through Catholic News Agency earlier this week. And I had met with him numerous times. He had come to speak on pilgrimages that Deacon Dom and Steve Ray and I did. And Steve Ray is actually the one who introduced me to him.
Oh, really?
But he and his wife bought a small place in Montepello. I didn't realize that.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know either. And he had connected us with a couple of guys in Poland who'd done some wonderful picture books over the years as well. And and obviously was a big support for EWTN Germany and Martin Rottweiler's team.
Yeah, but that's what I brought it up to talk about the collaboration that we have, not just here in the United States, but overseas, Doug, with so many sources and so many people who are doing great work. And Paul was certainly at the top of that list.
Absolutely, and that's the part that also always gives you hope when you see, some of the failures maybe closer to your home at different times and things not going along. And then you meet these great Catholic warriors and from all over the world who are imbued with the faith, and you realize the church is very much alive.
Now, he's going to be missed. I'm just so surprised he left us so soon. He was just such a gift to the Catholic Church and just a big partner with us at EWTN, especially in Europe and Catholic News Agency. Okay, so since the Pope has now revealed his favorite movies,
yes.
I think Ordinary People, but the favorite one is It's a Wonderful Life. He also likes Life is Beautiful, Sound of Music, and then Ordinary People with Robert Redford and Mary Tyler Moore. What's your favorite film? Do you have a favorite film?
That's funny. You're putting me on the spot. I put Spitzer on the spot on his show. And he said, "Oh, well, Wonderful Life, etc."
Yeah.
Well, it depends. I because I'm such a film person over the years, having worked on AMC and my great love is movies. It's always tough. I'm more genre oriented, and it's really a question of, there's so many great movies. If it's a Western, it's The Searchers. If it's great films made of all time, obviously, Citizen Kane is a marvelous technical film, and there's. So many other great movies that I gauge it a lot of times by if I happen to catch it, do I continue to watch it? There's powerful films like Paths of Glory that Kubrick made, and there's A Wonderful Life is so funny because we used to run that in the early days of cable because the rights were available, and one of the reasons it became popular was because of the fact that there had been a rights problem, which made it available to run on cable and on TV, and you didn't have to pay anything. And so a film that bombed basically right after the war was considered a little too Pollyanna right after the war has become this unbelievable message film to the world, certainly to the United States. And it just goes to show you that, wonderful product, even if it's missed initially, the things that really matter win out over time. And a lot of things that are popular, burn out. And that's how the church gauges so many things is does it have legs?
Yeah. Well,
what about you?
My favorite of all time is Roman Holiday, not just because it takes place in Rome, but because I love those. My two favorite actors, Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck, but I love the story because
Did you stick your foot in your arm in that thing?
My arm in the mouth of truth. Oh yeah, one year I had Dominic take me to all the spots. I didn't take the guitar and hit him over the head with it, but we did go down by the Tiber River and walked along the Tiber River and did the whole thing. And I had an ice cream cone, of course, or a gelato cone on the Spanish Steps and did everything. But what I love about that movie is there's such a respect for a relationship and it shows something that we don't have anymore, and that's media ethics. Because he decides not to turn in all these pictures of this famous princess at the end of the story because he's out of respect for her and out of respect for their relationship. So it's a beautiful love story, of course, taking place in Rome in the 50s. Great story.
Yeah. And Greg Peck is buried, is at the cathedral in L.A.
Yep.
He's there. Yep.
Great to catch up, my friend. Looking forward to next week as well. Doug Keck joins us on The Inside Word. We'll be right back. There's a new UK study out revealing that children are increasingly being exposed to pornography, especially through accidental social media exposure, over a quarter by age 11, and some saying 6 or younger, if you can believe that. That's a topic for Fact Check Friday. We bring on one of our experts, Catherine Snyder, with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Catherine, it just keeps getting more and more frightening, especially for those of us who care about children. Tell us a little bit more about the UK study, and thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Yes, unfortunately, this study has just proven what we've seen over the last few years since social media became a thing. and online pornography exposure especially. And this study came out of the UK, and it's saying that 70% of the children have seen pornography online, and that is up from 64% in 2023. So
wow.
It's just increasingly worse. It's just getting worse year after year. And these social media companies just have no legislation or laws to follow. They don't really care about our kids, is the bottom line.
So what do we do about this? Because I know that your organization is working for some very hopefully effective legislative proposals that would certainly help. Tell us about them and what else we can do, just like practical tips maybe for what parents and those concerned about this and its impact on young people can do.
Yes, absolutely. So we're focused on mass scale prevention, so going all the way to the top, so to prevent these kids from being exposed in the first place. So we're working things... there's a bill called the Kids Online Safety Act. It, mm-hmm. Last year it did pass in the Senate, but unfortunately didn't get passed in the House. So this year we're just really ramping up, trying to educate our legislators and rallying people to encourage their legislators to support this act. So we're just needing parents. We need people to contact their legislators. And on our line, on our website, on endsexualexploitation.org, people can go and just take action. It's really simple. It's a form, and then they can send it directly to their legislators. So we would invite people to do that. And then there's other actions through our corporate advocacy, pushing on these corporations to design with children in mind. So, yeah. And there's also the App Store Accountability Act and different other legislation that we're working on to prevent kids from just getting exposed in the first place. So that's
what's the App Store Accountability Act? How does that work, or how would that
so
work?
The App Store Accountability Act would make it so that kids, they would need to verify the age of the kids and give parents the opportunity to protect their kids. And then they would be held, a duty of care for that. Mm-hmm. So we just...
It's just so frightening in terms of the levels and the ages. A quarter by 11, you're saying, from this study, are seeing this accidentally, and some saying 6 years younger. Now, do we know with this study... And by the way, we're talking with Catherine Snyder with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Do we know if these young people are seeing this, these kids are seeing this? Is it on cell phones? Is it on their laptops? Is it accidentally in school? What's happening? Like, what are the devices? Did the study look at that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's mostly through social media apps, and especially Twitter, X, formerly known as Twitter. And because X allows pornography on their platform. And even though, like, if you went to the App Store and it says 17 and up, anyone could lie about their age and get in on this app. So kids are on that platform, and that's how they're being exposed. And then, of course, it does happen on other social media apps as well, all of them. So it's through their phone, their smartphone, and any way they can access these social media sites.
It's pretty scary, though. If you're 6 years old, what do you need, or even 11 years old, what do you need a smartphone for? That's my question. I'm sure you've looked at that as well, right?
Exactly. And you know, a lot of the tech companies, they're like, well, the onus is on the parents only. And the parents are the first line of defense for these kids. But parents, especially people my age and up, we didn't grow up with social media. And we didn't really understand the harm. So we let our children on these devices thinking that they would be safe. And study after study after study has come out on how problematic, especially pornography, is being exposed to our kids and handed to our kids. And they have no responsibility. These tech companies have no responsibility to provide protection for our kids. And they're making money is the bottom line. And they don't they don't really care that our kids are getting exposed to pornography.
Yeah, the scary thing to me, in addition to the information that we're sharing this morning of these young ages of children accidentally being exposed on various social media sites to porn, not to be a conspiracy theorist, but you wonder what's going on between these tech companies and these pornography distributors. Because if you can get these kids addicted at young ages, you've got a customer for life.
And that is the truth. Pornography is so addictive. And then the problem with it as well is that the pornography that is being produced out there is violent. It's aggressive. Mm-hmm. People don't want to hear it, but it is something that is so addictive that it's just like taking a drug. And if you're exposed to it at a young age, it's going to be detrimental to the way you view people. You start viewing people as objects rather than people. And then that the things that you're viewing, people tend to act it out, especially children. So there's an increased chance of child-on-child sexual abuse. And, these children will become sexual aggressors later in life. And it's just, we don't want our kids to end up that way. We want them to have healthy sexual relationships and not what they view in pornography.
Well, the thing about it is, too, is that the psychological damage, and you mentioned the sexual abuse that could occur, but the psychological damage, especially at the young ages, it's alarming in terms of the research on this. And you guys have been at the forefront of this for years. Where can we get more information on what you're doing, Catherine, and what we're talking about this morning? Give us your website.
Yes, it's endsexualexploitation.org. And there's lots of information and ways that you can get involved. And we would love to have you partner with us and walk along with us so we can bring this change, bring legislation. The Kids Online Safety Act, if passed, that would be the first time in over 25 years since legislation has passed for tech companies to hold them responsible and have them have a duty of care so that they design with safety in mind and not profit.
Yeah. And I really hope stories like this, and I'm glad that you put these press releases out there and make people aware, because I really hope it helps people who are being pressured maybe by their children, because everybody has a cell phone. I have to have one to rethink this. And if they are going to get a cell phone, to take your advice and the advice of other groups such as Parents Television Council that has all kinds of great resources in terms of how to make sure that those cell phones are just for emergency purposes only. They don't allow them to scroll. They just can program a few numbers and that's all they need. Catherine, thank you so much. God bless your work. Catherine Snyder is with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. We'll be right back. Catholic Connection on a Friday here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we're grateful for the great work of our friends at the Ruth Institute. Of course, including our friend Dr. Jennifer Obeck Morse and our guest this morning, Father Paul Sullins, who is the Senior Research Associate there. And Father, I am so grateful for your work in post-abortion research. And I was thrilled to see from the press release that Jen sent me that your study directly challenging the pro-abortion secular narrative regarding abortion and abortion fallout, it was published in an international journal, the International Journal of Women's Healthcare. So let's talk about this. What did your research find? And thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure. This was a survey of women aged 40 to 45, a random sample in the United States, sampled 1,000 women, asked them if they'd ever had an abortion, and about 23% said yes, they had. And so for those women who had an abortion, went on to ask about their emotional feelings about the abortion, whether they suffered any distress or not. And about half of them, and that is half of the women who had an abortion, reported that they had feelings of distress. I analyzed those questions and produced a scale of post-abortion distress. And about half women had some distress. About a quarter of the women had severe post-abortion distress. So for example, about a third of them reported that I have frequent feelings of loss, grief, or sadness. And another... a quarter reported, I have frequent thoughts, dreams, or flashbacks about the abortion. A proportion of women said that such things interfere with their daily life and make it difficult for them to function in daily life. So a minority of women who've had an abortion have severe post-abortion distress. Because this was a random sample, I was able to estimate about how many women that is in the United States. And so in the U.S., this is as of 2022, about 14 million women experience some level of post-abortion distress. About half of those, so to be a little over 7 million women in the United States, suffer severe post-abortion distress. This is not related to how long ago they had the abortion on this survey. It could be the abortion was 15, 20 years ago, but they still suffer a certain level of post-abortion distress. Women whose abortion violated their moral convictions tend to have longer lasting post-abortion distress and difficulty following that. The reason this study is important, as you probably know, Teresa, is that the existence of any post-abortion distress for any women is roundly denied.
Denied.
Denied in the secular research stream today. Now, I recently had this study published. It was in the publication stream for 20 months. And I found that particularly after the Dobbs decision, I couldn't get any traction at a journal, even journals that I thought would be likely to publish. Journals that published my studies on abortion distress in the past wouldn't study this one. So I went to six different journals, got a desk rejection where the editor said, no, this can't possibly be true. Or they may have been thinking, I don't want to risk publishing something like this right now. So I'm pleased that finally it got published in a respectable journal. And we're able to document the fact that there are women, there are many women who suffer post-abortion distress. Now, the sad thing is, of course, over half of women don't suffer any post-abortion distress. So when people say, well, you know, most women are untroubled by an abortion, that's true, but just barely. The fact is that there are many women, almost half of women, who are distressed by their abortion, and a quarter of women who've had an abortion are very distressed by it. And so it's a matter for them to get care, to get healing, to have their lives restored. But it's also a matter for women who are contemplating abortion to be aware that it may be distressful.
And to make an informed decision. And they don't get this information when they go to an abortion mill, Planned Parenthood, or otherwise. And we're talking with Father Paul Sullen to the Ruth Institute. He's their senior research associate. Thanks be to God. His study, Providing Abortion Causes Negative Effects, was recently published in a respectable journal, which is so, so important. And it challenges, as we've been discussing, the pro-abortion secular narrative that abortion benefits women's mental health and life development. This is such a travesty in terms of those who say they care so much about women's reproductive and mental health, and yet they don't give them all the information they need. This happens over and over and over again.
Right. Well, especially in the United States, because abortion is promoted by profit-making clinics. Now, you know, they claim to be nonprofit, but they make a lot of money off of abortion, Planned Parenthood and others. In other countries where abortion is a matter of public health care, women are informed. It's amazing if you look at the information that's given to women in many countries in Europe, even the more liberal Scandinavian countries, they're very clear about the fact that they may regret having an abortion and they may suffer psychological distress from that abortion. And in many of those countries, the women need to be screened by a psychotherapist before they're permitted to have an abortion. None of that is done in the United States because of the polarization and the sort of capitalist system where the ones who are providing abortions have strong incentives to promote more women having an abortion.
Yeah, it's again, it's just not just frustrating. It's really demonic to not give them this information. And it's just sad because I know we were talking about this during the break. You have many friends who have gone to confession. They've gone to a Rachel's Vineyard retreat or another retreat, post-abortive retreat. But it's still there. The pain is still there. The regret is still there. Yeah. They know they're forgiven again because they've gone to confession. The other thing, too, is it just defies common sense because if you know someone who's had a miscarriage, that loss is very great. And that was by no fault of their own. And so if you think about it, they're struggling with that. And that's something that they need. They need healing for that as well. The couple needs healing for it. And thanks be to God, there's ministries to address that as well. But then you think about, okay, this was something that couldn't help itself, right? It was a natural process, unfortunately, that happened where the child is lost. But if you have someone who had direct involvement in ending that child's life, why would they not be? It just doesn't make any sense, Father.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, you said it's demonic, and it certainly is, because the one thing that, the culture of death, which we see at the spear point of the culture of death, would be at the abortion clinic. Mm-hmm. And we know that Satan, our enemy, promotes death primarily through lies. He doesn't tell the truth. He deceives. And so in the research surrounding that, when they tell women, oh, it's going to be fine, you're not going to be hard, you'll forget about it, that's a lie. It's a deception. And it's exactly what Satan did with a woman, by the way, at the very beginning of this, as sin entered this world. So we have millions of women who go for abortions. It is their free choice, of course, but they are lied to. They're not given the truth about what might happen. And that is truly, you used the right word, that is truly from the devil.
Yeah. And so where can we see your study? Can you give us a link to the journal that published your study?
Yes.
Or should we just do a Google search for International Journal of Women's Healthcare?
Yes. You can just search that journal. You could say Sullen's Abortion Distress, and that study will come up. Also, there's a great webpage that the Ruth Institute has put up that's called Sullen's Abortion Research, and has this study and all of my other studies that I've done over the years documenting the different kinds of distress that women experience following an abortion.
You made so many interesting points in this interview so far, Father. I wanted to go back to something you said earlier about the fact that some people may say, well, you know, I've talked to a lot of women who've had abortions and they're fine, or there are other studies that show that there are many women who don't have a problem with an abortion. However, and you know this because you do this research, you go back, let's say if you had a study and you studied a particular group of women and you went back to those women 5, 10, even 15, 20 years later. Then the problem starts surfacing. And what doesn't come out is the fact that even though they don't think it's their abortion, and you know this as well as a priest, they're having all kinds of issues in their lives. They're having drug addiction. They're having problems with their children. They're having problems at work. And they're not associating it with the abortion because those in the counseling world, the psychological world, don't want to admit that there could be a problem. And isn't until usually when they have a breakdown, and I'm basing this on years of covering the March of Life and interviewing tons of people, I'm writing about this, something happens to them. And my husband is also a sidewalk counselor in Detroit. Something happens to them and they hit rock bottom, they turn their lives over to God, and that's when they realize what's going on.
Right. Well, the denial of post-abortion distress is driven by studies that follow women up to 5 years. I write about this at the beginning of this study we're talking about. But if you take studies that follow women for 10 years or more, every single one of those studies documents severe distress for some women following an abortion. So you're right. The longer women are followed after the abortion, the more likely we're to see some distress. Now, that's a characteristic of trauma. And the same things happens with, for instance, sex abuse. You have children who are abused, and they may not even acknowledge it to themselves for years, even decades. But later, in some difficult circumstances, it surfaces, and they realize what has happened, and those feelings come to the surface. That is often a pattern in abortion. In this study that we're talking about, some of the questions are also clinical questions for post-traumatic stress, PTS. Yep. It used to be called PTSD. Now it's just a syndrome, so it's PTS or PTSS. And For many women, having an abortion is a traumatic experience that they kind of suppress the feelings for a period of time, and then it surfaces later in their life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the numbers you gave us are massive. You think you mentioned there were a million, 7 million, 14 million. So if you just take those numbers, okay, what do we have, 300 plus million people in this country? Was it 320, 330? You think of the percentage. Okay, maybe that percentage is not that high. But the fallout from that in terms of what that does to their lives, how it can affect, as we mentioned, their work, their marriage, their family relationships. So you're talking about possibly, and this is also confirmed, as you know, substance abuse, broken marriages, child abuse, failure to connect with the children, many societal ills. In one of my chapters in my book, Extreme Makeover, I said that you can point to most societal ills, all those things I just mentioned, and find, at least in some studies, a direct connection to abortion.
That's right. Exactly. Now, you know, there's far fewer women who have had children. I think that's about 60, 65 million. So you have, it's a far higher proportion of women who have had children who have had abortions and have post-abortion distress.
Well, we're grateful for your work, Father. Keep it up. So what are you working on now? Are you doing more research in this area?
Well, I would like to, and yes, I am, and I have other studies that are in the stream at one point or another, but right now the Ruth Institute is focusing on persons who experience same-sex attraction. And instead of living a LGBT-identified life, they want to live in holy chastity or in a way that doesn't conform to those attractions. And so we have a survey that's just been finished. It's called Leaving Pride Behind. It's persons who have walked away from LGBT life, even though they experience same-sex attractions. And so I'm analyzing that now, and we'll be publishing those results in a while. That's another group of persons who the secular society
have been lied to.
Don't even exist.
Yeah.
Right.
Father, thank you. We're out of time. We'll have to have you back on for that latest research. And again, we've been talking with Father Paul Sullins of the Ruth Institute. He's our senior research associate talking about emotional distress after abortion in the U.S. We'll be right back. Four minutes past the hour on a Friday. Hope your Friday is going well. Appreciate your listenership here on EWTN's Catholic Connection, Monday through Friday. Coming up on the second hour on EWTN Radio Extra, our good friend Bill Donahue from the Catholic League is going to be joining us. He'll talk about a number of issues, including a response he gave to an interview on the bishop's statement on immigration. We'll talk about that, plus a number of other issues that are making headlines in the Catholic Church since the conference. Of course, wrapping up this week in Baltimore. And then for our 2 cents segment, I'm very excited about this because I want to take a look at the first reading today. If you haven't done your readings yet, the reading from Wisdom is so wonderful. And it talks all about recognizing beauty. There's a beautiful reflection, speaking of beautiful, in the Word Among Us about this, about how we need to take our time, even let's say if we can't decide today, we're so busy, we have things going on. Well, at least stop and look out the window, or just stop and think about a sunset, think about the ocean, think about something that you love in terms of God's great creation. I want to share some things about one of my favorite saints, St. Francis of Assisi, just wrapped up a series about him that's going to be airing next year on EWTN's Mission Advancement. It'll be online again, 8 parts, and we're going to be talking about some of the places where St. Francis commune with nature in so many ways. But for St. Francis, it was all about God. It wasn't about being an ecologist or an environmental person. He loved the environment. But to him, he wanted people to see God in all creation, which is why he wrote the Canticle of Creatures. So I'll share that with you as well and some other thoughts. We will be right back on a Friday morning. But this time, we need you to tune to EWTN Radio Extra online. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Friday. The weekend's here. Well, almost. You have to work. It starts at about 5 o'clock, most likely, or maybe later. It's November 14th, 2025. We greatly appreciate you continuing to listen here on the second hour of EWTN's Catholic Connection on the EWTN Radio Extra Channel. Coming up, it is a Friday, and so we're going to be having another Two Cents segment, as we always do. So at about 16 minutes past the hour, we're going to take a look at the first reading for today, which is just wonderful, and talk about the need to slow down and literally, as I like to say, smell the cappuccino and make sure that we are recognizing the beauty of the earth and how it reveals God in so many different ways. The reflection in Word Among Us is just incredibly helpful, I think, in helping us do this. We'll talk about that. And then I want to share The Creature of the Canticle of the Creatures by St. Francis of Assisi. You know, I'm doing a 5-8-part series, actually, on St. Francis, and this is the second series. The first one was Saints in Italy, and you can still find it at ewtn.com/Saints in Italy. St. Francis and St. Clair were a part of that series as well, but we also did a number of other saints in the Central Italy region. So this series that will be coming out next year, also online through EWTN Learn, is going to be dedicated to the year of St. Francis, because next October will mark 800 years since his death. And there's all kinds of events going on here in Italy related to the passing of St. Francis. But what St. Francis of Assisi did so well is he helped us understand the relationship between creation and God. It wasn't just about enjoying the animals and, you know, being environmentally sound. Okay, that's super important, caring for the environment. He did that. He was very, very conscious of that in his day, even though, again, it was 800 years ago. He respected nature. But it was all about helping people see God in that nature. It wasn't about worshiping the animals. It was about worshiping God through creation. And that's what he talks about, as I said, in Canticle of the Creatures. Even in the incident, which if you talk to people in this part of Italy, say it actually happened, his encountering the wolf of Gubbio, recognizing the wolf as a brother. He referred to the wolf as Brother Wolf. And when he spoke to the birds, when he preached to the birds in the beautiful area of Bavagna, Umbria, there's a painting of him, a fresco of him in the basilica, and it's on the upper level as you're exiting the church. You see him preaching to the birds. And there's actually a shrine along the road, and we're going to talk about that as well. But he preached to them and called them sister birds and recognized them again as creatures of God. All glory to God. It was all about glorifying God through nature. So we'll talk about that based on the first reading. And then hold on to your hats, because it's going to be a great ride. Keep your arms and hands inside the vehicle at all times, because our friend Bill Donahue, the Dynamo, the president of the Catholic League, is going to be joining us. He's going to respond to the very strong statement from the Bishop's Conference, making sure that Catholic hospitals are prohibiting transgender surgeries, as well as hormone replacements and hormone applications. So this is a big story. And he's also going to comment on the bishop's statement on immigration. He's already been interviewed about that since those two stories broke from the assembly this week in Baltimore. So Bill Donahue with us for two segments on a Friday morning edition of Catholic Connection, the second hour here on EWTN Radio Extra. All right, time to take a quick look at the weather. We still have those problems in California, by the way. And it's really kind of frustrating for the people there, because it's going to be with them apparently for the whole weekend. So the National Weather Service says the atmospheric river continuing to bring gusty winds, moderate to heavy rainfall, and potential flooding in Southern California and the Southern Great Basin through Sunday. Periods of heavy snow will continue as well above 7,000 feet over the Sierra Nevada mountains associated with that atmospheric river. Right now, it's 4 minutes past the hour. Again, do hope your Friday is going well so far. We do need to check the news. It is November 14th, 2025. Let's get started here on EWTN's Radio Extra. Well, speaking of the Bishops' Conference, Sharon Reardon tells us Los Angeles Archbishop Jose Gomez says the nation must come together to reform the broken immigration system.
He made those comments on Wednesday, just one day after the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops delivered what they called a special pastoral message on immigration in Baltimore. While the bishops expressed concern for the federal government's enforcement actions, they also said that they appreciate that countries should be able to establish a fair and orderly immigration system for the sake of the common good. The bishop's message went on to say, quote, human dignity and national security should not be in conflict, end quote. I'm Sharon Reardon.
Meanwhile, as Catholic News Agency reports, the Catholic advocacy organization Catholic Vote releasing a report examining the Trump administration's immigration enforcement efforts, concluding Christians must balance charity toward the immigrant with the common good of the receiving state. The report is titled Immigration Enforcement and the Christian Conscience, and it comes on the heels, as you just heard, of that special message on immigration released this week by the bishops. A faithful Catholic approach to immigration begins not with politics, but with people. That's according to President and CEO Kelsey Reinhart, who released that statement in a press release accompanying a special report. She says they are at the center of the gospel, yet mercy and justice travel together. One without the other distorts both. The report labels the Biden administration's border policies as reckless and credits them for resulting in human trafficking, sexual exploitation of immigrants without legal status, and rampant drug cartels. Catholics who advocate strong but humane immigration enforcement are sometimes accused of disobeying their bishops or the Pope and even violating church teaching, the group says. But properly speaking, there is no such thing as an official Catholic position on the practical details of immigration policy. The report also says, despite what some church leaders in America have indicated, a faithful Catholic can support strong and humane immigration law enforcement by means such as physical barriers, detention, and deportation without violating teachings of the church. The Oklahoma governor has granted clemency for a man on death row minutes before he was set to be executed. The governor is saying he made that decision to save Tremaine Wood's life after a thorough review of the facts and prayerful consideration. The 46-year-old was convicted of killing a teen during a motel robbery back on New Year's Eve in 2002. The Pardon and Parole Board had recommended clemency, saying Wood's court-appointed attorney admitted to drinking and using cocaine during that trial. Vice President Vance is now speaking out regarding the government shutdown.
Oh, of course. Privately, we were having conversations all the time. And frankly, privately, the Democrats would recognize the position of their far left was crazy. But they all feel a little bit like they're being held hostage by their far left. You said it very well. Chuck Schumer, this probably ended his career.
Vance saying on Fox News, Democrats brought stress to troops, air traffic controllers, and caused flight cancellations in his first public comment since the federal government officially reopened. The vice president saying it was all for literally nothing. He claimed the House deal that ended the shutdown was identical to one top Democrats rejected just weeks ago. Federal employees would now get back on the job as they and those who continued to work through the shutdown wait to learn when they receive their back pay. And federal food assistance will also resume for the millions of people still waiting for their full November payments. The FAA, meanwhile, keeping flight restrictions frozen after the government shutdown ended Wednesday night. Flights have been cut due to staffing shortages as air traffic controllers have had to work without pay, and many were calling in sick. More cuts were planned until, again, as we said, the president signed off ending the shutdown on Wednesday night. And Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem is praising TSA agents for those who worked during the longest government shutdown. During a press conference yesterday, she said agents stepped up and showed outstanding patriotism and service.
Stepped up every single day to make sure that those individuals at our airports and at our transportation systems continued to be safe and secure while they went about their daily lives and limited the impact on those families that relied so much on getting to where they needed to be on time.
She also announced and handed out $10,000 bonuses for those agents who worked as the shutdown rolled on. Jim Roop tells us Secretary of War Pete Hegseth is announcing a new military operation targeting drug boats.
In a Thursday post on X, Hegseth said the U.S. Southern Command will lead Operation Southern Spear. Southern Command oversees military operations in the Caribbean and Latin America. And in the post, Hegseth said the Western Hemisphere is America's neighborhood and we will protect it. This comes as the Trump administration continues to target alleged drug boats in the region. I'm Jim Roop.
The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, designating four European-based groups as foreign terrorist organizations. The administration singling out the German-based Antifa OST, the Italian-based International Revolutionary Front, and Greece's Armed Proletarian Justice, as well as a revolutionary class self-defense. Rubio's announcement following the Trump administration's designation Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization back in September. Those designations are slated to go into effect November 20th. Rubio says the nation will continue using all available tools for protection against what the administration deems to be anti-American, anti-capitalist, and anti-Christian terrorist groups. and police are on the hunt for a person who tried to confront acting U.S. Attorney for New Jersey, Alina Haba, at her Newark office.
In a post, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi says last night an individual attempted to confront Haba and destroyed property in her office and then fled the scene. Bondi says Haba was not harmed. She adds this is unfortunately becoming a trend as radicals continue to attack law enforcement agents around the country. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
People across the globe say they're worried about AI's impact, but they don't think that technology will come for their jobs. That's according to a new YouGov poll, where 72% of U.S. respondents say they worry about the broader economic effects of AI. Only 47% said they were concerned about their own jobs. When looking abroad, the survey found that 70% of adults surveyed in the U.K. worry about economy-wide AI impacts, compared to 39% who worry about AI-related consequences for their own occupation. The survey covered nearly 5,000 adults in the U.S., U.K., India, and Brazil, and it comes on the heels of major corporations laying off workers and citing AI as the reason. And the penny is no longer being minted here in the U.S. These New Yorkers, though, have started to stash them, they say.
Got to save the ones that you do have, right?
It's funny because I found like three buckets of pennies on the street and I put them in the house and I'm like keeping them now.
I'm going to cash them in. I got to download one of those apps and see what the value of the coins are now. Yeah.
The Fed say it costs about 4 cents to make a single penny and the move will save American taxpayers 56 million. People can still use their pennies, just that new ones won't be coined. There should still be plenty to go around though, since the U.S. estimates about 300 billion remain in circulation. And here's a scary story. Jacqueline Carl tells us the largest great white shark ever recorded is near a popular spot in New Jersey.
A marine research group called OSearch is reporting the shark called Contender has been detected just miles from Atlantic City. Contender is reported to be over 1,600 pounds, 13 feet long, and is believed to be about 32 years old. Contender was first tagged back in January in waters near the Florida-Georgia line and has pinged the research group more than 40 times since he's been headed north. In order for the group to receive a ping on Contender's location, his dorsal fin has to break the ocean's surface. I'm Jacqueline Carl.
And this week, we actually mark something called World Kindness Day. Research continues to show the positive effect of kind acts and even kind thoughts. One experiment at Iowa State sent groups of students out on campus for 12 minutes, with one group assigned to mentally wish that everyone they see had a good day.
What we found is the students who had been out wishing other people well in their minds, they were happier. They were less anxious. They had higher life satisfaction, which is really weird because that shouldn't change in 12 minutes. But they felt much better about their lives just from wishing other people well.
That's Iowa State University psychology professor Douglas Gentile. He says, conversely, the group assigned to spend 12 minutes thinking about how they were better off than others ended up feeling worse. That's a look at the news on a Friday morning. We'll take a look at the beauty of the earth and how it reminds us of the beauty of God. And when we come back, stay tuned. Minutes past an hour. Welcome back. You know, the readings are really reminding us to slow down and, as I said earlier, smell the cappuccino. First reading especially today. This is from the Book of Wisdom, chapter 13, verses 1 through 9. All men were by nature foolish, who were in ignorance of God, and who from the good things seen did not succeed in knowing him who is, and from studying the works did not discern the artisan. But either fire or wind or the swift air or the circuit of the stars or the mighty water or the luminaries of heaven, the governors of the world, they considered gods. Now if out of the joy in their beauty they thought them gods, let them know how far more excellent is the Lord than these. For the original source of beauty fashioned them. Or if they were struck by their might and energy, let them from these things realize how much more powerful is he who made them. From the greatness and the beauty of created things, their original author, by analogy, is seen. But yet for these, the blame is less. For indeed they have gone astray, perhaps, though they seek God and wish to find him. For they search busily among his works, but are distracted by what they see. because the things seen are fair. But again, not even these are pardonable. For if they so far succeeded in knowledge that they could speculate about the world, how did they not more quickly find its Lord? That, to me, is so incredible. What a reminder for us, right? We can get all caught up in a piece of art and how nice it is, or maybe architecture, and realizing that, wow, the person who did this was extremely gifted. But how many of us are recognizing where those gifts come from? And that's what I loved about the meditation as well, in addition to the reading, the meditation from our friends at Word Among Us. And you can just go to wau.org every day and read the readings and have a meditation and spend some time with the Lord, especially when we have verses like we do today in the first reading from Wisdom. The world is charged the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. In these lines, a 19th century poet and Jesuit priest, Gerard Manley Hopkins, rejoices in the splendor of God's creation. Notice how naturally he connects the magnificence of creation with its source, God. In contrast, today's first reading, Word Among Us says, from the Book of Wisdom, describes of pitfalls facing all who are in ignorance of God and who, from the good things seen, did not succeed in knowing Him who is. Humanity apart from God has always struggled with the pull to worship creation instead of the Creator. That's because of how easy it is to confuse the beauty and magnificence of created things with the one who made them. Now, if out of their joy and their beauty they thought them gods, let them know how far more excellent is a Lord than these. For the original source of beauty fashioned them. Again, that's Wisdom 13:3. Creation, as this reflection says, was always meant to draw us to the Creator. And thanks be to God, He has opened our eyes to show us that He is indeed far more excellent than any of the things He has made. No matter where we look, we can join the psalmist in proclaiming, which, by the way, was the responsorial psalm today, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims His handiwork. So today, if you can, go outside. As you explore the wonder and beauty of creation, ask the Holy Spirit to help you perceive the wonder and beauty of the one who made it. Let the power and immensity of the crashing ocean waves take your breath away. Marvel at the intricate design of a single flower. Hike in the woods, rejoice in all the plants and animals that live there. Be inspired by the amazing colors in a sunset. And if you're not able to go outdoors, close your eyes and imagine a beautiful seascape or landscape. Or maybe watch a nature program. Whatever you do, stand in awe of the Lord and let the beauty of His creation draw you closer to Him, the Creator of it all. And their prayer for today from the Word Among Us, Almighty God, I praise You for Your beauty and grandeur, which are imprinted on everything You have made. And that's what I love so much about St. Francis of Assisi, and I think he, knowing him as I do now, and I'm learning so much more about him being here in this area where he lived and ministered. Of course, he ministered all over Italy and all over Europe, but he was based here in Assisi. We're only about 30 minutes from Assisi. He was seen as someone who was an environmentalist, an animal lover, and all about creation. He is a patron of the environment. He's the patron of ecology. He's a patron of animals as well. But everything he did was for the glory of God. It wasn't to focus on the creatures, but the Creator. Let me take you back to Canticle of the Creatures, of course, by St. Francis of Assisi. Most High, all-powerful, good Lord, Yours are the praises, the glory, and the honor, and all blessing to You alone, Most High, do they belong, and no human is worthy to mention Your name. Praise be You, my Lord, with all Your creatures, especially Sir Brother Sun, who is the day and through whom You give us light. And He is beautiful and radiant with great splendor, and bears a likeness of You, Most High One. Praise be You, my Lord, through Sister Moon and the stars in heaven. You form them clear and precious and beautiful. Praise be You, my Lord, through Brother Wind, and through the air, cloudy and serene, and every kind of weather, through whom You give sustenance to Your creatures. Praise be You, my Lord, through Sister Water, who is very useful and humble and precious and chaste. Praise be You, my Lord, through Brother Fire, through whom You light the night, and he is beautiful and playful and robust and strong. Praise be You, my Lord, through our Sister Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us, and who produces various fruit with colored flowers and herbs. praise and bless my Lord and give him thanks and serve him with great humility. So every line of this beautiful canticle from the great Saint Francis, again, the patron of Italy, the patron of animals, the patron of the environment, the patron of the ecology, yes. But everything he did in pointing out the beauty of God was to make sure people understood where that beauty came from. Every single line of this, Most High, all-powerful, good Lord, yours are the praises, the glory, and the honor, and the blessing. Praise be you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially Sir Brother Son. Every line starts out with praising God first, before he brings up the sun, the moon, the stars, the water, the flames. He recognizes who is God, and he also recognizes it's not him. And Francis loved creatures, all creatures. He even preached to the birds. There's an actual shrine near the town of Bavagna, also in Umbria, east of Assisi, where St. Francis was so taken by a flock of birds that he slowed down and actually spoke to them and preached to them. And it's said that the birds actually were very still and listened to what this great saint had to say. There's also the story, of course, very well known here in these parts, of St. Francis and the taming of the wild, ferocious wolf of Gubbio. And there's a little church, and we're featuring this in our series, The Unknown Francis, an adorable church outside the city walls where he met the wolf. What did he say? St. Francis, placing his hope in the Lord Jesus Christ, who is master of all creatures, protected not by a shield or helmet, but arming himself with the sign of the cross, bravely went out of the town on the outskirts of Gubbio, where this ferocious wolf had been terrorizing people and animals and plants and the food of the people in this town. The wolf comes up to attack Francis, and this is from a beautiful writing by St. Bonaventure, but then laid meekly at his feet, Francis recounting the wolf's attacks on animals and people, saying that people had a right to try to kill it. But what did he do? He called it Brother Wolf. But Brother Wolf, I want to make peace between you and them. And by the way, this prayer is actually in Italian in this little church, Santa Maria della Vittoria, outside of Gubbio, which we're going to show you in the series. But Brother Wolf, I want to make peace between you and them so that they will not be harmed by you anymore. And after they have forgotten you, all past crimes, neither men nor dogs will pursue you anymore. So Francis treated the animals with respect. He treated nature with respect because he recognized that all of this was a gift from God. He spent so much time in nature, whether it was the Hermitage above Assisi or whether it was in Liverna where we receive the Stigmata in Tuscany outside of Florence, or whether it was down in Greccio in northern Lazio where he went to create the first creche. Again, helping people recognize the gifts of the Creator, all the beauty, the animals, the sky, the sun, the moon, all from God. It's a Creator that's great. His creatures are beautiful, but not nearly as great as a Creator. Something to remember today when we look outside and see the beauty of the world. We'll be right back. Always great to catch up with Bill Donahue, one of my favorite guests on Catholic Connection, president of the Catholic League, catholicleague.org. Okay, Bill, want to get your take on some of the happenings at the Assembly this week with the USCCB. A very strong decision prohibiting transgender surgeries and hormone treatment in Catholic hospitals across the country. Let's start there. What'd you think?
I thought it was excellent, and it's hard for me to believe why anybody could disagree with it. But on the same day, and this wasn't coincident, that somebody on our side obviously leaked out what was going to be happening on that day, you've got 10, quote, progressive religions, Protestant and Jewish, taking the opposite side. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before. To me, it's one of the greatest examples of child abuse that has been sanctioned by the elites, not by some crazy stepfather, but by the elites in our society, beginning with the educational and the medical profession. Now, what the bishops did, I'm very proud of them. They made it very clear. There is the human dignity that we are all called to respect, and that means that you cannot engage in this fanciful, fictional idea that men can falsely claim to be women and vice versa. It's all an attack on nature, and it's an attack on nature's God. That's what's driving this entire thing. There's no such thing as truth. Everything is a social construction. There's no such thing as biology. XY, XX, chromosomes don't matter. It's all a lie. And every honest person knows that it's a lie. And the bishops are standing up, and thank God for them.
What's so frightening about this is there's so much evidence that's out there now regarding so many who are detransitioning and the problems that they've had, you know, and what happens to these, especially these young kids. And all this information that came out of Great Britain when that one doctor who was practically murdered after she released that huge study, showing how many times there were several whistleblowers over in the UK, showing how many times they didn't do what they claimed they were going to do and give these extensive psychological examinations of these children who have a desire, they say, to become the opposite sex, hoping to find out that maybe it's you know, it's just something, maybe they had a problem in their family or there was some other type of a situation developing. Rarely did that happen. And these whistleblowers who were, before they you know, blew the whistle, were pro trans surgeries, and they realized that these kids were being, you know, basically used. There's so much information out about that, and these so-called religious groups still stick with the, you know, the transgender is a good thing.
Yeah, it's amazing that they say there's a full spectrum of genders. Well, in fact, there isn't. There's no such thing as a transgender person. You're either a male or a female. Now, you may think that in your head. You may think you're a kangaroo in your head, but that doesn't square with reality. We are called to tell the truth. And this is really at the heart of it, because postmodernism rejects the idea that there is such a thing as truth. I have my truth and you have your truth. Well, no, that's not true. We're on the radio now. We're not on television. That's not an opinion. That's a fact.
Right.
And people need to just... People, you know, I think people's instincts are basically good, but when you hear Harvard Medical School trying to tell us that you can identify yourself as these terms, I can't even understand them. They just make up all these different terms of what you may be. No, it's not even gender. I'm a sociologist. Gender is a sociological term referring to the norms and values and the identity of what is learned from society. It's the culture. We're talking here about biology.
Mm-hmm.
That's not sociology. We're talking about sex, male or female. And this idea, they want to believe that if everything is a social construction, therefore, when they take over the command center of society, they can change the culture, they can change the social institutions, and therefore change human nature. The Marxists tried it. It has always, always failed. Not only did NFT, but it leaves a trail of misery and oppression. These people are the new totalitarians in our society,
right,
wanting to take control in their genetic and sexual engineering.
It's so frightening, though, that we have to talk about this and that the bishops have to issue statements. But I'm just going to read from the report on Catholic News Agency just to give people a perspective of how far gone this issue is with those who are supporting so-called transgender transitions. This is the bishop speaking. In their guidelines, a bishop's noting it can be morally permissible to remove or suppress a function of one part of the body for the sake of the body as a whole, though only in very limited circumstances, such as when a body part is diseased. So we have to spell that out. I mean, seriously? You have to spell out, okay, yeah, let's say you have to remove, God forbid, a woman has breast cancer or ovarian cancer, or someone has, you know, who knows what, a cancer somewhere else on their body.
You have to amputate a person's leg to save the body.
Right, right.
This happens. Those are legitimate reasons not to attack someone's body and to attack what God has delivered and what nature has delivered. And get involved in genital mutilation. This is insanity, and it's being driven again by the elites.
So where do we go from here? I mean, obviously, this is a very, very strong statement. This isn't the first time the bishops have spoken out on this, but it's obviously not being received very well by some of those so-called religious organizations. What do you think is going to happen now? Are there still places in Catholic medical care where some of this is being done in secret, do you think?
Well, it may be under the radar, but right now I think those people, they should have gotten the memo. Look, you know, we have laws against speeding, but there are people who speed every day. So the best you can do is basically to enforce a sensible stricture. And what they've done is they've done that. If there are people who cheat, there are people who cheat, and they should be held accountable. But what the bishops have done, though, they've made it very clear. This is not vague. Sometimes they speak in vagaries, and that bothers me. This is very specific, very pointed. bullet-oriented. You cannot do this. And to stop with it, this is really the contemporary example of child abuse today. I am stunned that even though the Europeans have pretty much learned from this and are backing off, the people who are in last place are in North America. They're in the United States and Canada. We still haven't quite got it. Although the people, the public have. If you take a look at the survey data on this, the American people have turned the corner, and they're not looking to the elites to come to their decision-making. They know the elites are wrong.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the Catholic News Agency article, they mentioned the EWTN news analysis that was done last year, saying it showed that nearly 150 Catholic hospitals across the U.S. did provide children with transgender drugs or perform gender transition surgeries on them between 2019 and 2023. Do you think they will get the memo now, though, with this additional strong statement from the bishops?
Well, what the bishops have to do now, they have to put some teeth into this. You know, okay. you just can't say you shouldn't be doing X. The question is, what are the consequences if you do X? And what they have to do is to take away their funding. That'll get them going very quickly, believe me. But they've got to have the guts to come forth now and drop the hammer, because otherwise they will continue. Any kind of stricture, any kind of law, norm, means nothing unless it's enforced.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we are going to take a break. Then when we come back, I want to talk about the hot-button issue on immigration. You were already interviewed on this, and I saw your great quote from Newsday. Sometimes it gets very frustrating because people don't want inhumane treatment of illegal immigrants, but they do think that there have to be controls and there has to be borders. And the Catechism is pretty clear that, yes, if you are coming into this country, you are to welcome the immigrant, the widow, the most vulnerable, but a country also has a right to protect itself. And somehow I think that, that's my personal opinion, I think that overall message is getting lost in this discussion, even in the church. So I'd like to get your reaction, Bill, to the immigration statement that
Absolutely.
Was issued by the bishops this week as well. We're talking with our friend Bill Donahue, of course, from the Catholic League, catholicleague.org. And Bill has a new book out that actually is going to be available, I think, Bill, early next year, right?
Yes, February.
All right, and we will have you back on when that comes out. But Bill's with us for another segment. Stay tuned. More Catholic Connection coming your way on a Friday. Having a great conversation, as we always do, so insightful, with our good friend Bill Donahue from the Catholic League, catholicleague.org. Okay, this issue of immigration, interesting report that was released, and I led with it this morning as one of my top stories in the news. Catholic Vote releasing a report examining the Trump administration's immigration enforcement efforts, concluding Christians must balance charity toward the immigrant with the common good of the receiving state. The report, titled Immigration Enforcement and Christian Conscience, comes on the heels of the special message on immigration released by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops at its fall meeting this past week. So you were already interviewed, I know, I think it was on Newsday, and you had a quote about this. Tell us your thoughts first on their statement, on the bishop's statement, Bill.
Well, look, when it comes to people who are in the country illegally, there's got to be a humane way to get them out of the country. But the problem I have with the bishop's statement and in general is that nowhere in the document does it make a distinction between those immigrants who came here legally and those who came here illegally. That, to me, is a moral delinquency. Because of what it says to the people who've been waiting online legally, that you're the sucker and we're going to reward the cheater. There's nothing moral about that. Now, how you handle people once they've come in, that's a different story. But they're talking about they're taking great umbrage at mass deportations. Well, can't we get to the root cause question? Why are there mass deportations? Because we had a mass invasion under Biden, which was all intentional. It wasn't a mistake. It was all by design. It was all calculated. And then they left this country with a mess, taking up social services, taking away hospital beds, schools. Many of them have been victimized in vicious, violent ways. And all we hear is lip service. It's kind of like a footnote. Well, they shouldn't be doing that. Well, wait a minute. How did they get in here in the first place? And when you say we have to be treating them in a humane way, the inhumanity that many of these, not all of them, but that's for certain, but too many of these illegals have created, the victims are all over the place, and many of them are children who, as one priest told me just recently, what about the sex slaves? Why aren't they talking about them?
Mm-hmm. And the motion passed, as Catholic News Agency explains, with support from more than 95% of the American bishops who voted in favor, receiving 216 votes in favor, just 5 against, and only 3 abstentions. They seem to be, I don't want to say obsessed, but this seems to be the main issue for them right now and has been for a while.
I think part of that is driven by the fact that there's an interest on the part of the bishops to be perceived more fairly by the secular elites. And by that I mean, to be explicit, their tag now is being too conservative with their ideas on marriage, family, and sexuality. Well, the Catholic Church is conservative when it comes to that. It does respect traditional morality, but they don't want to be perceived as being too conservative. So now they're going to genuflect the other way and show the secular elites that we're on your side with regard to the poor and the oppressed and the like. And I'm not saying that it's not heartfelt for certainly many of them, and maybe most of them. But the fact of the matter is, this is selective compassion. And I think it's being done more for PR grandstanding, quite frankly, so that to show that there's some balance here. Quite frankly, we should be driven by one word, truth, and that's it. The truth is, we had a mass invasion, and now we have to deal with that situation. And yes, that may call for mass deportation. Are we going to line up people by the millions and handle them one by one? What about all the people who've been waiting online legally? What do we say to these people? It's really a problem which they we need more than just lip service, that you have a right to protect your own borders. It was last December, I believe it was, the Vatican tightened its strictures as to who's allowed in. So they understand borders, so why shouldn't the American bishops?
Well, I'm wondering how families of victims who have been hurt by illegal immigrants and some of these drug lords and other folks who have been doing some things, and we know there's been many, as you mentioned, who have been involved in serious crimes. The bishop said in their statement, "We lament that some immigrants in the U.S. have arbitrarily lost their legal status. We are troubled by threats against the sanctity of houses of worship and the special nature of hospitals and schools. We are grieved when we meet their parents who fear being detained when taking their children to school, and when we try to console family members who have already been separated from their loved ones." Okay, we're concerned too, but what about concern for other people involved in this huge problem?
Yeah, I don't recall the bishops ever addressing the question of emptying your asylums and your prisons, which they have done in many parts of Latin America. They know what's happening. What are these people going to do when they come in? I come into New York City every morning at 6:45 in the morning. I see the people who've been up all night with their drugs. It's a mess. And you can't run a society when you have a breakdown of the social order. And in this particular case, you're literally exporting the people who are a real serious social problem in your country, and you send them off to our country, and then we don't say anything about it from a religious standpoint? Mm-hmm. I just find that delinquent.
How are Catholics responding? Have you seen, and we have some stories, I haven't seen too much about it, though, in terms of Catholics who are responding to what the bishops are saying on this. What do you think? Well, what do you think is this, based on your own research in the past on this issue?
Well, quite frankly, most Catholics wouldn't know anything about it. For all kinds of reasons, there are almost no more hard copy newspapers, Catholic newspapers, left in this country. When I was a kid and as an altar boy in Long Island, when you came out of church, they were giving out the tablet, because that time Brooklyn Rockwell Center, which was all part of Brooklyn Diocese, they've been with tablet. Every Catholic took home the newspaper. Now there are none left. They're digital, and most of the people aren't going to read them. And if you go to church on Sunday, most of the priests aren't going to talk about anything contemporary because it might be too controversial. They're still living in the shadow of the scandal, which only affected a very, very small percentage of the Catholic priests, but it did succeed in intimidating them. And in this extent, I'm on the side of the priests, believe me. It's what the media and the educational establishment have done in trying to jack this thing up and make it sound like every other priest is a predator. They talk about Islamophobia. Look at the phobia against priests. So I don't want to get too far into this, but quite frankly, the bishops have to, and the priests in general, the clergy, have to be more willing to take up the moral mantle and speak out. And don't feel that you have to be trying to force balanced. Just speak the truth. You don't have to balance things. Just speak the truth.
Well, I wish they would give the full statements from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, because the Catechism is very clear, as I said earlier, that we have a right to protect our borders, and people coming into this country need, if they're illegal, they have to be following the laws. They can't hang around and just think that they're going to get away with it. I mean, that's pretty clear in the Catechism.
Well, they're not going to open up the offices of the USCCB and welcome all these people in and let them sleep there, nor should they. They don't do it in the Vatican. They don't do it in the churches. Can you imagine what would happen? So, look, there's got to be, you have to, Lord, any decent society, if you're going to maintain some freedom, you have to have some degree of order, a modicum of it. And that means if people aren't willing to police themselves because they have no sense of self-discipline, because there's no such thing as a family in many of these cases, then the police have to do the job. But now the police are being attacked. They're the enemy, and whether you're ICE agent or a policeman here in New York City. So this is the kind of society, this is what happens when you lose common sense and you move away from traditional morality and you start trying to invent new ideas based on individualism. That once the idea sinks in that we all make up our own idea of truth, it's over.
Right. It's frustrating, though, because the message seems to be that if you're not for the open borders and what the bishops are proposing, then you don't care about immigration. And this is from some who have a strong ideology about this. There's another good quote in this Catholic News Agency report on the summary. Catholics who advocate strong, this is from Catholic Vote, but humane immigration enforcement are sometimes accused of disobeying their bishops or the Pope and even violating church teaching. Properly speaking, there is no such thing as an official Catholic position on the practical details of immigration policy, but I think some in church leadership make it seem otherwise. And if you read the Catechism, it's a prudential matter. We can disagree about this.
Well, that's true. It is a prudential matter. And I can tell you, I know an awful lot of Catholic men and women, all different age groups, and I don't know of one, not one single person, and they're not all on the conservative side, maybe many of them are, but not all of them are. I don't know one who would agree with the bishop's statement on this. One of the reasons why Trump won the 7 swing states is precisely because we knew that it was an invasion. This is taking over America and our resources away from the poor in this country who came here legally and giving it to people who have another agenda. And this is being funded by a lot of left-wing foundations. We know about that, the Soros people and others. The Rockefellers, this is the Tides Foundation, Arabella, I could go on and on. They're pushing this kind of agenda. And it's not because they're interested in having compassion for immigrants. They want to break American society. And if you read what they say, they're very open about it. This is not a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A conspiracy is something behind your back. This is right out in the open.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So how does a faithful Catholic respond to this, do you think? Someone who wants to, you know, support their bishop and support the church, but also has real concerns about what's going on with this issue. What would you say to our listeners, Bill?
Well, I would say listen to what they have to say, and if you disagree, respectfully do so. And if you have a parish priest you can speak to some of them about it. What you can't do is just simply say, well, whatever the bishops say, automatically we have to accept. This is not the magisterium here, okay? And actually, the voice of the Catholic Catechism would be closer to the voice of the magisterium. But you have to be respectful, of course. But clearly, when people are told that, yes, you have a right to accept to protect your borders, and then everything else that follows is all on the people who came here illegally.
Exactly.
And you don't make a distinction between the legal and the illegals, you've lost the people. And this is what happens to the prestige of the episcopate. It declines then, because people just turn them off.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think people have to really pray about this, and I think it's important, and it's unfortunate that a lot of people don't even know this is going on or what the bishops have to say, but I think it's important for us, I think it's a reminder to go back to the basics of the faith and to look at what the Catechism says and to understand the difference when it comes to a matter of prudential judgment versus the Pope speaking from the chair, right?
That's exactly right. Yes, compassion for the poor. The question is, how do you operationalize that? How do you exercise compassion for the poor and for immigrants? Where does it begin? Again, if you don't make a distinction between the people who come here legally and illegally, you're already off to a bad start, at least in Bill Donahue's book.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's confusing, isn't it?
Well, I think that would be the kinder interpretation. One could be sinister about it and say, wait a minute, you know there's a difference between somebody who comes into your house who's welcome, you invite your friends in, Thanksgiving and Christmas, you invite your family in, and then somebody else can enter your home too, but he wasn't invited in, and maybe he comes in for sinister reasons. So you make a distinction on that. You may have to call the police on that person, and that's what the administration is doing right now in Washington. We effectively had to call the police in a collective sense to say, what are we going to do with all the millions of people who came into this country and have taken jobs and taken hospital stays and taken education and taken economic resources and taken lives? What are we going to do with these people? I mean, this problem would never be on the bishop's table right now about mass deportations had it not been for the mass invasion, which was intentionally allowed by the Biden administration, about which we hear very little.
Yeah, that and that is brought up in the excellent report from CatholicVote.org. They talk about this in terms of what happened and how many millions were allowed to come in. And, you know, we were talking as well. We have friends here in Italy, a wonderful young couple who so badly want to come and work in the United States. They're both very talented. They've been waiting, I think, almost 5 years now, Bill, trying to get into the U.S. because they're doing it legally. They're trying to go through the process, you know?
Well, yeah, and what do you say to those people? That you're the sucker and then we're going to reward the cheetah?
Yeah.
I mean, where's the moral? That's not a moral position. That's immoral.
No, both should have been addressed. I agree. Bill, great to talk to you. We will certainly catch up very soon. Check out all of his great work, his statements, press releases, articles, CatholicLeague.org. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Thank you. Weekend. Hope you're having a great day so far. You are listening to the second hour of Catholic Connection. Closing the show here on a Friday, November 14, 2025. And do check out these reports on Catholic News Agency. The summary they did from Catholic Vote is very good because it explains the teaching of the Church, what the Church says about the immigration issue, which is very clear in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And so it's important to know the difference between, let's say, a prudential matter, something about which we can disagree, and something coming, as Bill Donahue said, from the magisterium. Extremely important. Coming up on Monday's program, of course, we will have Gail Buckley Behringer with our scripture verse of the week. We're also going to be talking about a very important issue, another pro-life issue having to do with, the IVF embryos being made. I don't even know how to get through these words. I'm not kidding. All right, this is Live Action, our wonderful people at Live Action, an amazing pro-life group. They're going to be joining us. It's just so chilling. IVF embryos being made into keepsake jewelry. It sounds like something out of a horrible science fiction film, but it's real and it's happening. And then, of course, we are going to have the wonderful Matt Swain from the Sunrise Morning Show on with us, and he's going to talk about the Journey Home highlights. He is the producer of that fine program and, of course, a host of the Sunrise Morning Show. So that'll be great because it gives us an idea. It's kind of sort of what Doug does on Fridays, talking about what's coming up, and he gives you the highlights of the Journey Home, one of our most popular programs on EWTN. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on a Monday. Ciao, ciao.